Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, from the Championship Mile High Two Daft Yanks Studios. And joining me, as always, is my sidekick in the polar Two Daft Yanks Studios, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, kind of go through the motions on this pod, you know. Busy weekend, busy week with training people at work. I might just mail it in. I don't know.
Mail it in. That's right. It's fired up, crowd. Mail it in, crowd. Let's go. That's right. We survived Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday.
Yeah, and my birthday on Friday. So yeah, it's been a
that's right.
It's been a busy week with beer and work. So that's right.
I survived the Super Bowl party.
Yeah,
just barely. And then my birthday is coming up in a couple weeks. So yeah, it's a festive time for us here at TDY.
Yeah, February.
Yep, it's the best month of the year.
Yeah, it's the shortest month, but the best month.
That's right, and we're here to talk some footy, and as always, and the big story this week, Corey, and I guess the last 10 days really, is, you know, other than beating Liverpool, and then other than destroying Manchester City on their home field, and other than Vardy scoring one of the goals of the year, and then Mahrez with a similarly equally as good goal against City, Leicester's accomplished nothing in the past 2 weeks.
I'm not sure what you mean, because yeah, they haven't won anything yet, and you know, we've just spent a decade of being told that it's all about the trophies. So yeah, I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay, well, I was being sarcastic.
Of course, but I still don't know what you mean.
Well, you know, it's just this media thing where people, and it is February, and I will say now that since it is February, that I said I would not take Leicester serious until February. And it is now February, and they're just coming off the heels where they've beaten, you know, a mid-table Liverpool. But then they just went and simply destroyed and out-hustled and out-everything Manchester City. And so the other shoe's not going to drop with these guys, is my point here. And there's a lot of factoids running out there, like the past five league leaders and coming into February have won the league. They say no league leader as late as February has fallen out of the top three. So yeah. Leicester's there, if you like it or not.
Yeah, and even going back further, the one that I saw was, I think, 20 out of 24 February leaders have gone on to win the Premier League.
There we go, and that's a big number. That's nothing that you can discount. So, hey, so the juggernaut Foxes, we had that a while back. That was a very highly downloaded podcast, I think, because of the name, the Juggernaut Foxes. So maybe we'll make this podcast the Juggernaut Foxes Redux.
Yeah, and we should copyright that, because that would make like a good, you know, some underground metal band, either their band name title or like, you know, some heralded CD title.
Juggernaut Foxes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got, yeah, Juggernaut Fox, you know, any. Whatever. It sounds metal to me.
Okay. Awesome. I'll pass that on to our trademark, our lawyers who are onto that side of the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, man. And then the Manchester City game was even more impressive, Corey, because I don't know if you saw this. This is courtesy of Match of the Day, not the NBC version, which is okay, but the BBC English version, the original. The mothership, which I still don't understand how they can't, somebody can't, you know, buy that rights to that, to actually broadcast it over here. But anyway, I'll use my illegal stream. Thank you very much. And they came out with this. This is amazing.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yes. I allegedly did.
Yes.
But the Manchester City starting 11 for the game against Leicester cost them a total of £223 million. The Leicester starting 11, 22.25 million. So you're talking Is that 20 times more?
No, it's 10 times.
10 times more. Yeah, sorry. Math is not my this time of the night. My math is not. So 10 times more they spent on their just their starting 11. And never mind, they probably had another 60 or 70 million on the bench at least.
Yeah, which I didn't see that specifically, but I have seen some there's already some hindsight transfer gurus floating around on Twitter that are, somebody should have bought Mahrez for more than 700,000 or whatever he cost Leicester.
Yeah, from the French league.
Yeah.
I think it was 400,000, but yeah, it was under a million. We can agree on that, which is insane to think about the production. And as you said, and now many people are catching on, season ended today, he's the player of the year, not Vardy.
Pretty much, because, I know a lot of my Arsenal brethren, would like to put Mesut Ozil up there, and Ozil has had a terrific year. But, yeah, I mean, again, I guess I will pat myself on the back because it is kind of fun. But, yeah, I stand by what I said a few weeks ago that, he's the player of the year for me.
Okay, now let's tackle another thing here is Leicester's style of play.
Okay.
A lot of people seem to think that they're this, swashbuckling side. They score a lot of goals, but they give up a lot of goals. But that's not really how they're organized at all. And would you like to give kind of a breakdown of what you see?
Well, I think a little bit of that is correct because the early part of the season, they did ship in a lot of goals, but they've definitely gotten, and again, that's why they've stayed up at the top, is their defensive organization has gotten a lot better. So yeah, they were shipping in, two goals a game, generally speaking early on. But if I remember correctly, their defensive, their defensive totals the last 2 months or so has been pretty freaking good. And then, they've gotten much better at, not shipping those goals. So like I said, I think part of that is technically true because, they're obviously, people are basically remembering the first 3 months of the season defensively. You know what I mean? So,
I got you. And I do have those numbers, and we'll get to them. But no, my overall point here was if you watch them play now, and I have quite a bit because they've been on, as we've said, they're really not – they basically play on the counterattack, and they're incredibly deadly. They put 10 people behind the ball. Their only outlet is Vardy. And they turn the ball over, and their first move is to play the ball over the top into space and let Vardy track it down, and everybody else is pushing forward with them. So whoever has the ball, has four or five options on a counterattack, and teams just aren't used to being able to handle that. So Leicester is scoring all these goals basically from the counterattack is my point.
Well, and I think Leicester's a perfect example of how kind of like what we talked about in the past that you can be counterattacking and get 10 men behind the ball and be defensive, but you're also offensive because even though you get 10 men behind the ball, when you do counterattack, you're counterattacking with five or six. You're not counterattacking with two or three, like in the old days when people would get 10 behind the ball in a 4-4-2 and they would basically only attack, they would hoof a long ball to a tall center man, and it was the other striker that was basically the only option after that. So, like I said, I think that's where Leicester is a good example that you can be defensive and also offensive because of how you attack or, how you organize yourself both with and without the ball.
Yeah, and counterattack doesn't have to be a negative thing. Most of the time, if you say, oh, they're playing on the counter, people kind of deem that as derogatory.
Yeah, or that it's a strictly defensive system, which it technically isn't, or that defensive strictly means that you basically try to win 1-0, when a defensive, some defensive system, cause technically Barcelona's system there, that, or the gegenpress is technically a defensive system. They just force teams to turn the ball over, high up the pitch. So, like, so if you really wanted to be cynical, technically the gegenpress, is a defensive system. So, like I said, I think that's where sometimes people kind of lose the plot is that, like you said, counterattacking, generally most people take that as negative defensive tactics when it's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so they just play a very quick, get the ball back, and just get it upfield as quick as you can, counterattack. And they have the players, even though, as we just said, they spent $22.25 million on their entire starting 11. And they have players who believe in the system. And Ranieri has to be, you know, no matter what happens from here to the end of the season, he has to be your manager of the year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that much is obvious. And that's another thing that's been kind of amusing the last couple of weeks is that, again, you're now starting to see some of the UK journalists start to kind of sheepishly admit, it's like, well, as much as we want to make fun of him for going to Leicester, he's kind of making us all look stupid now, you know?
That's the case. So, yeah, let's get back to this defensive record. And so I dug through the stats and broke down their goals because I was interested in – because at the beginning of the year we said, well, you know, they look good. They're scoring goals. But that defense really concerns us, and we just don't think that they could simply outscore people at this rate, and they haven't. So listen to this. You'll find this quite interesting, I think. Okay, so through August, from the start of the season in August through October – they played 11 games and conceded 19 goals, which was the 16th worst defense in the league. So as we said, they were in the top four still at that stage, but they had a bottom four defense. And we said, that is not sustainable. Okay, now listen to this. Since October, so from November until now, they have played 14 games and have only let in 8 goals. Which is the best in the league over that time. So, I mean, when you're going, you know, less than a goal per game, and they're almost half of that. They're barely allowing half a goal a game. 8 goals in 14 games since that point in time. So that is the reason why they've really shot up the table, and now they're 5 points clear, and according to the odds makers, are the odds-on favorite to win the title.
Yeah, because – Before the defensive numbers kind of dawned on me, they shipped one of their defenders out on loan, who I can't remember the guy's name at the moment, but I thought that was kind of curious because I was like, well, they just brought in some young defensive player, but generally January transfers, even at clubs like that, especially defenders, generally don't play right away because, you know, obviously they're worried about the defensive organization stuff. And, you know, like I said, this January transfer, they usually take a few weeks to settle in at best anyway. So when they brought some young defender in and they shipped some other guy out, I thought that, like I said, that I couldn't kind of, you know, overtly put my finger on it. But like I said, when I saw that, I was like, well, that's kind of an odd move. So, you know, like I said, that was one of those like, man, Ranieri must be confident with his, you know, with his defensive setup going forward. And then that's when I realized, when I actually went and checked the numbers, like, holy shit, their defensive totals have actually gotten pretty freaking good.
Exactly. And they kind of did it without anybody talking about it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, yeah, that, I mean, again, to kind of beat our own drum, when that kind of flies under the radar, even for us, you know, that's pretty sneaky.
That is very sneaky, sir.
Yeah, because, you know, I expect stuff like that to slip by the likes of, you know, as much as I hate him, I can't remember his name at the moment. You know, the moron who holds up newspapers on Sunday morning. Why can't I think of the guy's name? Neil Ashton. I expect that kind of stuff to slip by the likes of Neil Ashton. I don't expect that, you know, to slip by the likes of us.
I heard that Neil Ashton's on the move.
Oh, is he?
That he's going to another newspaper. But I haven't confirmed that.
Good for him.
Yeah, anyway. So I guess to wrap up this conversation, and there's a couple more things here. Do you think that maybe Leicester, with the way that they put this team together and the way they played, that do you think that they might change maybe the paradigm, so to speak, of maybe, you know, not your big money clubs, but some of the smaller clubs on a limited budget, might they try to copy what Leicester has done? Or do you think this is just a lightning in a bottle? It's a one in a million type of thing. And sure, other clubs may try to recreate it, but it's probably an uphill battle to do so.
Well, yeah, depending on, again, what exactly you mean, because Leicester's what Leicester's doing isn't unique. It's the thing that we've kind of talked about the last couple of years, is that no longer do teams that come up, they just, you know, try to draw and, you know, steal points here and there and hope for survival. I mean, or, you know, the days when they would come up and they would play bunker ball, you know, the last several years, pretty much since Reading in 2007, I believe it was, you know, more of the teams that come up try to play now, because it isn't like the old days where even when teams still have, you know, good talent, you know, clubs don't necessarily fear clubs anymore because of the, you know, the that prestige thing. You know, I mean, even the man, you know, the vaunted Man U Theater of Dreams thing is kind of dying now. So, like I said, I don't think it's a thing where Leicester's doing anything unique per se. So, like I said, if clubs emulate that, it's not necessarily, you know, because of Leicester. But where I think the other thing I think you're kind of alluding to is that it is at the moment an anomaly. You know, obviously the future, you know, before that happens, I don't know. But the Leicester is a perfect example of one of the things that I'm always kind of harping on Twitter and elsewhere, is that Leicester is the good example of how to build a team versus amassing talent and hoping a team comes out of that. You know, the football, you know, what we mock even as much as we play it, the football managers where, oh, just give me $200 million, or, you know, like the Glenn Sather, you know, GM type, oh, give me $100 million and I'll win the year. I'll win the title every year. And he never really won it, or, you know, other than Edmonton, but that's a different story. But just meaning that Leicester, like I said, it's a good example of building a team is not the same as just amassing as much talent, you know, as you can because you have a lot of money.
No, I understand that. Yep. So, yeah, we're kind of on the same lines there. So there's a whole bunch of themes that go into that. And then if you look, too, at the table currently, I mean, Spurs are in second place. And they're kind of like Leicester, but with a lot more money. Mm-hmm. Kind of gone through a cycle where they, you know, scattergun transfer approach. You bring in Pochettino, you get a better transfer policy where you bring in, you know, quality players with a good work ethic who will work within a team construct. And look what Spurs have done with less talent than others around them, just like Leicester.
Yeah, no, and like I said, it's what money does is, and this is the part of money that people don't understand. Having money, generally, you can recover from mistakes a lot quicker because you just re-spend more money. Where when you don't have money, it's your mistakes are highlighted because once you make the mistake, now you don't have the money to recover from the mistake. But if somebody does learn how to spend the money frugally, or not frugally, but wisely, i.e. spotting a hidden gem like a Mahrez and then building him up, again, that's where you can make a successful team or a competitive team on a shoestring budget, or you know, at least shoestring compared to the rest of the Premier League. So I think that's where people kind of lose the plot sometimes when, you know, when you are talking about the likes of City or Chelsea or Real Madrid or Barcelona, where they're able to stay at the top for so long, is when they do make, you know, a $40 million, or, you know, whatever, a $25 million transfer mistake, they have enough money that they can recover from that. You know, a Stoke or somebody like that makes a $25 million transfer mistake, and it takes, you know, four or five years or longer to recover from that.
Exactly. No, that's a good point. And so I guess to wrap this up here, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, and this makes me angry, but we'll talk about it because it just shows the mentality.
Just don't go David Banner on me.
The mentality of the punditry in this country. You got a old knucklehead, Taylor Twellman, saying, oh, it's hard for me to explain this Leicester thing to other Americans, because and he was trying to give, you know, a parallel, an American parallel of Leicester. And he was given all these examples, and all these people are saying, oh, no, it's this. No, it's this. It's this team. And the answer is there is no parallel, because there's no promotion and relegation in any sport here.
Well, so, if you,
I mean, you can't compare it. It's like comparing apples to giraffes. That's how different it is.
Yeah, because, I mean, the only closest parallel you could maybe draw is college sports, where, you know, sometimes programs that weren't good 30 years ago are now good, you know, like a Kansas, like Kansas State football. When I was five, both the Kansases were freaking terrible. So you can maybe draw a parallel to some of the college programs, but even that, like you said, because they're all technically in the same, you know, in the same division, it, like you said, it's even that is still not a good parallel.
Yeah. So that just annoyed me. And I'm sure a lot of you out there saw that and people were chiming in, and there was a lot of people chiming in like me saying there's no comparison because there's no pro rel, but yeah, college football kind of fits, but again, you're still in the same division. So if you're in Division I college football, you theoretically have access to all the things other Division I programs have. You didn't have to fight your way up, but they, even though you kind of they did, you know, like the Kansas and Kansas State are pretty good examples, and you're probably right. That's probably the closest thing that you can compare it to.
Yeah, because I don't know. The thing that bothers me the most about that comment is this, again – and again, I don't know if it's, if he's under orders to say this or if it's just one of those that, you know, he kind of said it without thinking. But this, again, this kind of concept that it's something that Ted touched on when he was on our show, like this idea that somehow Americans can't understand the Leicester situation, when those of us who have watched European soccer for 20 plus years know damn well, you know, the situation probably better than the likes of Taylor Twellman, you know, even though he quote, you know, played the game professionally, you know, technically I've been at this game longer than he has, you know what I mean? So that's mm-hmm. the thing that kind of bothers me about that kind of mindset, that it perpetuates this myth that, like I said, that it's the same thing Ted said, that somehow Americans can't understand promotion relegation when, like I said, that subtly perpetuates that MLS line that, oh, well, America, that's part of the reason why Americans don't want pro rel, because they don't really, or they don't fully understand it, which, like I said, is bullshit.
Yes. And with that, we will gone out Leicester City, the juggernaut Foxes. Ooh, that felt good. I haven't used the gong in a long time.
Yeah, do it again.
Yeah, one more time.
Ash Wednesday gong. We're not giving up the gong for Lent.
No. In fact, you're going to get it one more time just to prove
yeah,
it.
Yeah, one more time. Hat trick.
Okay, now we've been doing This Week in Daftness, you know, for a good long while, obviously. And we've covered all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, like juju, witch doctor spells with Adebayor. I don't know what some other things that we've seen. Referees getting like stabbed and shot, just insane stuff.
Yeah, the Bulgarian and the Romanian ref that was chased off the field with a gun or something.
Yeah, but today's is pretty odd. So with that said, let's bring in our favorite non-paid British announcer lady.
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
We need the guts to play football.
Ryan Giggs, do you think he should be a part of the future of Manchester United?
It's a stupid question, I think. It's a stupid question.
Louis van Gaal's army! Louis van Gaal's army!
How daft.
All right, Corey, This Week in Daftness comes to us from the championship and the bottom of the championship with the club Charlton.
Oh, what did Charlton Heston do?
Do you have any idea why Charlton is in the news?
Oh, is this because of the they didn't know who? See, my mind's all over the place because the last few days have been so busy. The guy that they didn't know who he was, you know, he was shipped there on loan, and they sent him back because they didn't know who he was. What was that guy's name?
Oh no, we did talk about that last time. Yes, Reese Oxford?
Yeah, the Reese Oxford thing. It's not because of that again?
No. I forgot they did feature last time in This Week in Daftness.
Yeah.
So this is a twofer.
Man, Charlton's showing up. Yeah, this is unprecedented.
Yeah, so Charlton is in This Week in Daftness again. because the club is currently investigating a fake resignation letter that was delivered to Corey. Now, this is insane. To the company's house, which is a UK thing. And I'm trying to kind of remember. It'd be like, you know, here corporations are each state's secretary of state. You know, you got to send in your corporation papers. Right. You tell them what's going on. So in the UK, it's the company's house. And they oversee all these things. And what happened is...
It's sort of like a chamber of commerce type of thing.
Kind of. So they kind of oversee all the official documentation of corporations. And as we know, the boards of all these clubs, you know, are technically corporations.
Right.
So we go in right now. The chairman of Charlton is a lady named Katrin Meir or Meyer. I don't know. M-E-I-R-E. Katrin Meyer.
M-E-I-R-E.
Yeah. We'll call her Meyer. Yes, Katrin Meyer. I haven't heard her. I didn't see this in the radio or the news or anything, just in the newspapers here. And so what happened is the supporters are very upset about this new owner who came in last year, and she's been appointed the chairman since this new owner came. There's protests against this lady and the owner, and apparently they took it so far as they sent in a fake resignation letter to the official corporation holding entity in the UK saying that she quit, even though she didn't really quit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's illegal, but I admire the effort.
It is illegal, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty much the definition of fraud.
It says the company's house looked at the documentation. They said it looked like it was in good faith, and they determined that the documentation was real. And then somehow the club got alerted that, okay, what are you guys doing since you don't have a chairman anymore? And they found out, hey, we didn't send any paperwork in. She didn't get fired. And so under an act of 2006, it says if an individual is found filing false documents to the company house, you could receive up to 2 years in prison. So there's some Charlton fan who probably will get caught at some point, and he'll be serving 2 years in prison. So that's love for your club, where you're willing to go to prison for your club.
Up to 2 years in prison.
Well, up, yeah.
And I'm sure he'll lose his season tickets.
Yes.
just a wild guess.
Yes, when you file a fake resignation letter to an official government entity saying that your chairman has quit when she in fact hasn't.
Yeah.
That's a little over the top.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I admire the effort. I admire the passion. But yeah, unfortunately, that makes you a criminal.
So, yeah, the club quotes saying they're taking this investigation seriously and blah, 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 blah. So there you go. Yeah, that's a first. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a the only remotely close thing to that is, like, I think Benfica stole the paperwork from I can't remember anything today. Who was the great Portuguese player that died a couple years ago? What was that guy's name? Jeez.
Oh, the guy we celebrated him too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can't remember anything today.
Man, me too. Began with a B. Was a B in his name?
Anyway, that's the only thing that it remotely sounds similar to. This was Benfica basically intercepted the postman so that Sporting couldn't get the paperwork, you know, into the Lisbon offices, so they were able to file the transfer papers first.
Yeah, and we talked about that on that show. I remember.
Yeah.
Man, I can't look that up. I'm brain dead too. I forget guy's name. He's one of the greatest players ever. We went on and on about him, and now we can't.
It's been a long week.
That's really sad.
Long week and a lot of beers.
That's very sad. That's daft. So we're included in This Week in Daftness because we can't even remember.
Yeah, there you go. Honorable mention ourselves.
Was his name Beltran?
No.
No.
Like you said, I'm going to feel like a complete moron when it pops up.
When we hear it, yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You're on the clock.
Sabio.
Oh, Eusebio. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the only thing that sounds similar was – when Benfica basically stole the mail so they could get the transfer papers in first.
That's some high-class espionage there.
Hey, anything to win, right?
That's right. Ain't cheating, ain't trying.
That's right. SEC.
All right. Now let's, we've been talking about the top of the table here with Leicester, but let's update ourselves on our relegation battle, Corey, in the Premier League.
Sure.
And I know that we spoke about this at the end of the year, at the halfway point, on what certain clubs needed to stay alive. So I have those numbers. I did the math. So let's update you here. Aston Villa, at the halfway point, they had 8 points in 19 matches, which was 1.25 per match. And we decided that for the rest of the season, they needed to average 1.52. Well, that's not right. Hold on. 0.42. Sorry, I got too many numbers. I got like old notes because I wanted to do this a couple weeks ago and I forgot and I used the same piece of paper. So they were averaging 0.42 points per game. 8 points from 19. They needed 1.52 to have any chance of staying alive. And so far, since the halfway point, they have 8 points in six games, which is pretty good. They got two wins and two draws. So they're averaging 1.33, which is really good, but it's still quite a bit short of that 1.52 mark. So I think we could all agree that even though they have a slight uptake in form here, that Aston Villa is still in a world of trouble.
Yeah, well, I said they were going down then, and yeah, they're still going down.
Okay, your mind hasn't changed. All right, next up then was Sunderland.
Yeah, there's no way Villa's getting out of that hole.
All right, 12 points in 19 games was 0.63. They need 1.31 to have any chance of staying up, and so far they are in the same pace as Villa. They got 8 points from six games, and that puts them at 1.33, which is right above that 1.31 mark. So they are giving themselves a fighting chance, is the unsinkable Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, I still say Sunderland's going down as well.
Okay, so now if you look at it, they're only 4 points out of the relegation zone. So they're on Aston Villa's on last and 16. Sunderland is in second to last at 20. Next up is Norwich, who wasn't on our list. They are currently in the relegation zone on 23. I've looked at there. So if they have 20 points right now, you need 17 points to – no, 14, sorry. They got 23 points. So they only need 14 points from their final 13 matches to reach the 37-point mark, which has been the average to stay up the last 5 years. But it seems to me, looking at these numbers, is that you – 37 may not make it in 40 – the traditional 40 may be the number that's actually required this season.
Yeah, because a lot of the other clubs that are just above them are kind of – they're not a similar point total, but they're on a point total that's not too far away. So meaning that the problem – it's kind of like when certain clubs have to – you know, when they're shooting for the title, but, you know, they need five other clubs to falter. That's, you know – other than statistically, that's almost impossible. So that's the problem that Villa and the likes of Sunderland are facing, or you know, the likes of Norwich, is that the clubs that they're chasing, or not just the clubs that are chasing, but the clubs that are above those, you know, i.e. the Chelseas that just got out of relegation scare, aren't separated enough to where there's all the points are going to be basically fought over for the rest of the year. So they're technically not just chasing the couple clubs above them. They're chasing the several above that as well. So like I said, it's one of those that's the problem that clubs like that are going to face this year, is that, you know, it's not a relegation battle, but you know, basically two teams over one spot. It's basically the three teams, or, you know, the eight teams or whatever it is over the three spots.
Exactly, and that's how I view it as well. So the next up here, you got Newcastle, who was in the relegation zone. They had 17 points from 19 games, which was 0.89 points per game. We said that they needed to average 1.05 the rest of the season to have a chance to stay up, and so far they have 7 points from six games, which is 1.16. So that's gotten them out of the relegation zone. So if they keep this up, they're probably going to stay alive. Newcastle, even though they've had all kinds of problems, but hey, they just spent what, a good 30, 40 million in the January transfer window.
Well, yeah, were they in Sunderland with the busiest teams in the window, I think. Isn't that what we said last week?
In England, yes.
Oh, yeah, in England.
Mm-hmm, correct. And then last but not least, I guess we'll throw Swansea in there. They have 27 points. They're the next. And so they're in really good shape to get to that 37-point mark. They just need 10 points from 13 games. So that kind of show you how, well, yeah, Sunderland and Villa, as you said, may be doing enough to maybe get to that point. But the problem is when the clubs, they need Swansea or Bournemouth or Newcastle to completely collapse. And the chances of that, of two of those three clubs collapsing to that level, is pretty, pretty low.
Well, yeah, because even Chelsea is still technically not out of the woods yet, because they're only 6 points or 7 points above that last.
They're 7 points now, yeah. Chelsea's on 30 points, and Norwich is on 23.
Yeah, so like I said, things are so tight this year that technically Chelsea's still kind of lurking around that relegation battle.
And as we said, if it wasn't for Arsenal, they'd be down there. So thanks, Arsenal.
Yeah, well, thanks, stupid refs and stupid red cards and yeah. Diego Costa.
That's right. So there's your relegation wrap-up. So it should be interesting. We'll see. Somebody might escape. I don't know. I think Sunderland might be able to do it, but it's going to require, as we said, someone else to collapse. So it's going to be entertaining at the bottom of the table as well. And the top two. So, yeah. So there you go. That's the joys of all that. And yeah, while go ahead.
Yeah, before you get to your next point, who do you think Aston Villa is going to draft next year?
Well, I don't know. I think they could use a holding midfielder who can, run the point.
Ooh, Von Miller.
Yeah. We made that joke on Twitter today. Some people were going on and on about, if Michael Jordan played soccer, the U.S. would be good in soccer, some garbage. And then that's when I brought up Von Miller as a holding midfielder. And then somebody jokingly said, how about Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson? Yeah, and I was like, there we go. Lefty playing left back.
Yeah, there you go.
That makes perfect sense. And then someone chimed in, well, what about NASCAR drivers?
Yeah, no, screw NASCAR. Athletes. Open wheel cars, man.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, because, shoot, Michael Andretti's got a temper on him. He could be our Joey Barton.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sorry. I didn't mean to derail us there.
No, it's fine. It's welcomed. So since we were talking about the relegation battle, I thought we'd talk about the promotion battle here in the championship.
Yeah.
Just kind of give people an idea of what's going on and what teams are battling, because, we're getting here. And the bigger point I wanted to make is this is a great time of year because, in the beginning of the year, we're still kind of prognosticating, doing things, and then we get into that middle part where it's just game after game after game, and we're analyzing games. But now, as we're getting into the run-in, about 13 games left is all. Think about that. Not much. Now you can kind of formulate in your head what's going to happen in terms of European qualification, who's going to get relegated. And especially now we could look at the table in the championship and think who is going to be jockeying their way to get into the Premier League next season, which is more meaningful than ever with the new TV contract kicking in. So here's just your roundup here, Corey. In first place in the championship currently is Middlesbrough on 57 points. They are followed by Hull on 56 points. So if things ended today, which they don't, of course, Middlesbrough and Hull would be your automatic qualifiers. In the playoff chase is Burnley, who's had a pretty nice season so far, you'd have to say, after being relegated last year, on 55 points. So they're still in the mix for automatic promotion, as well as Brighton in fourth place on 53 points. And then you have Derby County, fifth place on 51 points, who just fired their manager, Paul Clement, by the way, which was kind of an odd move. And they got Sheffield Wednesday in sixth place on 50 points. And then you still have a bunch of other teams within striking distance of those playoff spots. And Ipswich on 48, Birmingham on 47, and I guess you could include Cardiff, the red-blue Dragonbirds, on 45 points.
Yeah, it's amazing that Cardiff and Hull didn't go out of business when they got relegated.
I know that. It's amazing, huh?
Yeah, isn't that what we're always told, that relegation hurts clubs?
And Burnley too.
Yeah.
They're in third place there, only a point out of automatic promotion. But hey, if you listen to the nut jobs, who are the real nut jobs? Hey, I thought Burnley got liquidated and they, you know, were breaking down the stadium for firewood to use in the, you know, those English winters.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's weird that the people who are called the nut jobs are the ones that usually talk from historical records, and the ones who claim that aren't the nut jobs are the ones who are actually just spouting off opinion.
Yeah, so do you have any observations, any other additional input on the top of the championship and what we might see the rest of the year?
Other than obligatory Arsenal reference, Hull City with Chuba Akpom in their strike force now had a hat trick the other day in the cup. But yeah, Hull City's got Chuba Akpom playing for him now, so they're doing well.
And that was on loan?
Yes.
Okay.
That, and I kind of hope Wednesday, you know, gets promoted, because it's been a long time since Wednesday's been in the Premier League, and Wednesday is where John Harkes played.
Okay, and then I guess Bournemouth bought another former Arsenal striker, Afobe. What's his name?
Yeah, but Bournemouth's in the Premier League.
Yeah, I know, but they bought him from the Championship.
Yeah, they bought him from Wolves.
Wolves, okay. That's what I was going to ask. I couldn't remember which club.
Yeah.
And Wolves.
Similar color, different club.
But Wolves are – actually, they're not in the Championship.
Yeah, they are. They're –
I'm looking at their list. I don't see them.
Yeah,
listed.
They're in 11th.
Oh, 11th, yes.
They might be listed as Wolverhampton.
They are. I was just looking for Wolves because usually they are. But this one's got the full name. This one says Wolverhampton Wanderers, the whole name.
That's right. It's actually the official name.
It is. Well, of course. So there we go. And then I guess at the bottom of the championship facing relegation right now, and that's a tight battle as well. I mean, the championship is crazy, folks. You should really at least follow the standings, the table more. You'll see Charlton's in last on 24, Bolton's on 24, and then you got Rotherham on 25, and then Bristol City on 28, and then MK Dons on 28. So I'm sure a lot of people are rooting for MK Dons to get relegated.
Yeah, and this is a this is a good test for Tim Ream over at Bolton, because he's facing in a relegation battle over there.
And I guess Fulham's in the mix too there at 29 points. They're not too far out of the woods, so.
It wasn't didn't Fulham get relegated to League One 2 years ago or something? And they got re-promoted?
Did they? I don't remember. It might have happened.
Maybe it was a championship relegation battle that they survived. I know they were doing pretty poorly last year.
Oh, they were, yeah, and I think they did survive.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's the big reason why they didn't want to sell Moussa Dembélé.
Yeah, the other Moussa Dembélé.
To Spurs, because they are in that relegation battle. So, all right, so there's your promotion and relegation battles, the lifeblood of European soccer. So now let's just take a quick glance, Corey, at the weekend.
Sure.
And there's going to be a lot of interest, especially on Sunday. Because you have the top four teams are all playing each other. I do believe the early game, and it's an early one for you. You probably won't want to even sleep. It's 5 o'clock in the morning my time, 3 o'clock in the morning your time. Arsenal hosting first place Leicester.
Yeah, when we play that early, I don't go to bed. So especially at the 3, because usually the early game is 3:30 or 3:45. But yeah, 3 o'clock, I'm not going to bed.
So, yeah, so there we go. So, Leicester versus Arsenal should be a pretty good match, and it will have a lot of implications on what happens. I think Arsenal, are they 6 points back?
Five.
Okay, yeah, I guess Spurs and Arsenal are joint second. But Tottenham, on this is weird for me to say, on a league-best goal differential.
Yeah,
Tottenham have the best goal differential. What is this world coming to?
Again, what did we learn a few weeks ago? We're not joint second. You're second. We're third.
Yeah, because goal difference is a real thing.
Yes. It's why they track it, because it's the main tiebreaker.
Yes, and it's as I said it. What has happened to my Spurs? We have the best goal differential in the league. What? Plus 25. That's insane to me to even think about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying not to talk about this because this may be the first time in 20 years that there may not be a St. Tottenham's Day.
So Leicester versus Arsenal should be good, especially with Arsenal getting more and more healthy. So that should be an entertaining match. And at home, they should do well. But, you know, Leicester, both home and away, they don't change their style of play.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because it'll be very interesting to see if Leicester scores first because of the whole ticket malarkey during the week that – if that turns the crowd against the club. So, yeah, it's one of those that I don't think being at home is necessarily an advantage this time.
Okay. And then later in the day, I think it's the
– or as big of one.
On Sunday is Manchester City will be hosting Spurs. So you got second versus – is it second versus fourth and then first versus third on the weekend. So Spurs will travel to Manchester City. Obviously, they're not going to be very happy because they just got destroyed at home by Leicester. And then, if you remember, early in the year, Spurs played one of their best matches of the year, and I think they beat Manchester City at White Hart Lane like 5-1. So that will be weighing in the minds of City. That's if they care. I don't know. They're so up and down. It's really hard to get a gauge on them. And as we mentioned with the whole, they know Pellegrini's not going to be there. He's a lame duck. I don't know how much they're going to fight, but talent alone, they should still get in the top four, you would think. But I don't know if they'll have the work ethic. But every time I say that, then the next game they come out and they play hard. So yeah, they're a hard club to kind of judge right now.
Yeah, because it's even before the whole, the Pep thing was sorted, Yaya Torre's looked disinterested for, most of the year. So – like you said, on talent alone, you would think they would win, but with the lame duck manager and a potential, Torre's not lame duck because he's supposed to be there next year. But yeah, between a lame duck manager and a disinterested captain and a now, mercurial David Silva, who's, hasn't been in his best form this year. There's no telling what you're going to get with City on Sunday.
Yep,
although, like weekend, you said, yeah. Say, although, like you said, after the hiding they got last weekend, you would expect a response. But yeah, if they don't respond next week, then it would definitely call into question, a lot of the players' work ethic, like you intimated. Excuse me. Damn.
Yeah. Gotcha. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And it should – I don't know if it will change too much because, win or lose, chances are the current top four will be your top four. We just don't know the order. Would you agree with that?
But I think that's where if y'all can get a result against City, then all of a sudden that's going to draw the two Manchester clubs into a fight for that last Champions League spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then West Ham, even though West Ham's been playing pretty poorly lately, West Ham's still kind of lurking around. So, again, maybe that's one of those, if y'all do happen to get a result, maybe a few other clubs will, smell some blood in the water, so to speak.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And before we bow out here, I guess we should mention we had a couple FA Cup replays that were completed. West Ham defeated Liverpool. So adios, Klopp, which I find still kind of odd that I guess they had the League Cup final. But, you'd have to say that Liverpool at this point in time, they're not going to make a run in the league with the form they've been in. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't play a stronger side in the FA Cup because then you give yourself two chances at a cup instead of just one.
Yeah, because when I saw their lineup, I was – the midfield they put out, it's like, I only know who these people are is because I'm one of those roster nerds that, that scours U20s stuff every other week just to make sure, people weren't promoted to the first team. So like I said, I knew some of the names, but I was like, to put out that midfield in the FA Cup, that's that's kind of weird because, again, that's the kind of thing where 5-6 years ago, people like Ferguson and Wenger were getting blasted because, oh, well, they put out a young guy or a couple of young guys in the FA Cup and they're turning their nose up at the FA Cup, blah, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm. And then today, I guess it was a good team for teams or clubs with West in their name because today West Brom defeated Posh in their replay to advance to the next round. So there you go. West Ham, West Brom.
Yeah, with Posh with a couple of former Spurs, that Suleiman Koulibaly and Shaquille Colthurst.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I think Colthurst is just on loan, if I remember. But anyway.
Oh, I think that's actually a sale.
Okay, well, there you go. Two former Spurs for Posh.
I think they did sell him. But I can't quite remember. Yeah, like you, everything's hazy. It's very hazy. So we'll try to clear the cobwebs out, folks. And next week we'll get to talk about specifically probably those two matches involving the top four teams and whatever else may happen, which is plenty. You never know. There'll be plenty to talk about. And then I guess, heck, next midweek is we got knockout rounds of European football start up.
Yeah, because like I said, this weekend is definitely going to you know, the result of the Leicester-Arsenal game is definitely going to matter, you know, for us over at Arsenal to where, you know, even if we draw next weekend, I think that's pretty much the end, the legitimate end of our title hope.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we'll be back next week to break it out down. As always, we thank you for listening. Enjoy the football this weekend, and we will talk to you guys soon.
R.I.P. Marvin Day. Word, word, word.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.